The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2019 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2019. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
I think we'll go ahead and get started officially. Welcome to our session, a workshop on formative assessment, hands-on formative assessments. It's a pleasure for me to be here. I appreciate you coming. If you're just coming in, I'm sorry we handed out everything that I had, so I won't be able to be as active and hands-on for you in the back. I apologize, but you'll get the idea by watching these others up front. So let's pray together as we begin. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for this conference. I thank you for all the people here and the schools they represent. Thank you, Lord, for what you are doing among us, among your people. We do pray you would bless our time, help us to be, to grow in wisdom as teachers, to help our students to grow in wisdom as well, helping them to understand better, to take more responsibility for their own learning. And we pray you would give us a blessing again for this time in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, again, welcome. My name is Brian Lynch. I'm the headmaster at Veritas School in Newburgh, Oregon, the gateway to the Willamette Valley wine country. Anybody been there? You know Newburgh? Yes, excellent. If you haven't been there, you must come. Do come in June or July because, January, February is not quite as nice as you may have heard. It rains all the time in Oregon, so don't move there, whatever you do. Just come to visit and go back home. So welcome. Again, I'm the head of school. I'm the headmaster at Veritas. I also teach half-time. I teach humane letters in 11th grade and rhetoric in 11th grade. So that's really my heart. That's what I love doing. Administration is excellent and important. It gives me an opportunity to work with lots of teachers, which is the other thing I love to do. But it's the classroom that really has driven me for these, 37 years as a classroom teacher. So the workshop today is designed around giving you hands-on tools to use in your classroom in September or August. How many of you start in August? Wow, okay. I'm sorry about that, but for the rest of us in September, whenever you start, here's some actual tools, some things you can use. John Milton Gregory in his Seven Laws of Teaching, which I assume you've all read, right? Or you will. If you haven't, in his chapter on the law of the learning process, he says that the learner must reproduce in his own mind the truth to be acquired. Learning is thinking into one's own understanding, a new idea or truth, or working into habit, a new skill or art. The learner must reproduce in his own mind. Learning is thinking into one's own understanding. Checking for understanding, ongoing formative assessment, is critical. It's one of the foundations of great teaching. We have to make sure, as teachers, we have to make sure that students are thinking into their own understanding. Right? As Chris Schlecht said, how many of you for Chris' previous session? That was fantastic, wasn't it? It's not the teacher show. I love that. Right? And I see that so often when I observe in classrooms, teachers thinking they have to supply all the data and information and knowledge, and they have so much. You all have so much to contribute to your students, and you want to do so much, but what really matters is not what you do or even the subject, but what they do, right? What students do. So checking, ongoing formative or checking for understanding is critical to that. We as teachers need to know, are they getting, are they understanding? Are they thinking it through themselves? And we can only do that by checking. Okay, so really quickly, how many of you could explain the difference between formative assessment and summative assessment? You think if someone asked you, someone sitting next to you, could explain the difference between what we call summative and formative? If you think you could, give me a thumbs up. If you're not sure, thumbs sideways, okay, let me see them, come on. Thumbs down, if you know, you don't, and if that you're honest, that's great. So I can't see all the thumbs. Get them up there so I can see them. Okay, that's perfect, thank you. So I've got plenty. So let's find out. Who are the thumbs up people? All right, let's see. Let's see if you really know what you're talking about. Okay, you claim to know the difference. Could you please tell us the difference?
Well, I think formative assessment is more, how's the learning going so far? Summative is the wrap-up of the content.
Okay, how it's going so far, the wrap-up. Would you agree with that, or would you add something?
I would say formative assessment.
Everyone hear that in the back? Probably not. I won't make you speak up. Informing the practice as you're going along, okay? What else would we add to that? Difference between formative and summative. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. Formative assessments can happen at any time. They inform our teaching along the way. The summative is more of a wrap-up. Anything else? Yes. Right. Depending on how you use them, right? Yes. So, good. All right. So, many of us have a beginning understanding or good understanding already. I saw some sideways thumbs and down thumbs. That's great. Hopefully, that helped a little bit. We're making the distinction between a summative, which happens at the end of learning, whether it's a lesson, typically a unit, and it's some kind of an activity, a quiz or a test or a paper, something that wraps up the learning that typically is graded. I mean, that's kind of the distinction that I will make between formative and summative. The summative is going to be a graded event, goes in the grade book, or measures somehow at the end, whereas formative is an ongoing check to see where we are on the process of learning, to make sure, for me to make sure, and for the students to know, are they getting the learning? Okay, so that's the distinction that we'll make between the two. So I'd love to talk just really quickly through some of the key features of formative. This is in your outline, and then we're going to move to the packet again. I apologize, I don't have enough for everybody, but it's on your outline as well. So the main ideas are in your notebook. So some of the features of formative assessment, really quickly. First of all, it should be done frequently and during the lesson. So we need to check as teachers frequently during instruction to make sure that students are learning. That seems really obvious, I know, but it can be so easy to get drawn into our content. We have so much to do. And we're behind a week already, and it's only October, and so our tendency then is just to go. And then we do a test in 2 weeks, and we discover that we have really low test scores of what were those kids doing, I don't understand why they didn't study, etc., right? You've probably heard yourself say things like that, or a colleague. So the problem, of course, is not the students didn't study. The problem is we didn't know where we were along the way. So we need to frequently, during the lesson, check for understanding. It's our GPS, right? We know where we're going, but we need to know where we are now, too. Are we over here or here? Are we on the road where we need to go? So, again, encouraging you to think about checking for understanding along the way frequently. So that's number one. Secondly, a good formative assessment should be involuntary and all-inclusive. It's all play, right, for everybody all the time. Involuntary. So why not just ask, are there any questions? Does everybody understand? Are we ready to move on? Anybody, seriously, why not just do that? Anybody have an idea? Why is that? If they don't get it, they're not going to tell me. Do you got the same hands all the time? Yeah. They get this fluency illusion, right? Yeah, they think they know. Are there any questions? I don't have any questions. I'm ready. Let's go. When maybe they don't, right? Of course.
You don't want to prolong the discussion.
Yeah, let's move on. Exactly. Come on. What else?
They don't know what they don't know.
They don't know what they don't know, essentially. Exactly. So they don't know what they don't know, or they think they know, or right? So you can't just ask. You can't just call on the hands that are up, right? We know that, too, because you're going to get the same eager students. And there are plenty of students that are happy to have the eager students do all the work, right? you do the work, they do the work, it's fine, I'm having a good day. No, the work must be shifted to everybody. So formative assessment, ongoing checking for understanding, has to be all-inclusive. Chris was previously was talking about class culture, and that's part of creating that classroom culture as well, that everybody is on all the time. You can't just turn off. You have to be ready to explain your thinking at any moment. You might be called on it, and you know, cold calls and things like that are good as well, specific cold calls, but we want to make sure we're checking everybody systematically, consciously checking everyone at any time, so that they're not, we don't want them afraid or anxious, but if it becomes part of the classroom culture, then they know they have to be alert, they have to attend, right? They have to actively attend, because you could check for understanding at any time. So frequent and during the lesson, not just at the end of the learning, involuntary, all-inclusive. Thirdly, we want to make sure we connect our checking for understanding deliberately to the learning targets, to the goals or objectives, however you phrase that. We use the term learning target, Veritas, but you know, different schools, of course, use different terms for that. I ask our secondary teachers to post the learning target on the whiteboard. They write it up there every lesson. The student will be able to. We use that language. I'm not afraid of John Dewey, just so you know. Yes, that may be progressive in some ways, but at the same time, that's really what we want. We, as Chris said in the previous session, we want students to do the learning. We want to shift the learning to them. It's not what I say, it's what they're able to do with that, to think, to write, to speak, right? So we post the learning targets, and then when we check for understanding, we want to make sure those formative assessments are connected to that learning target. I'm checking that. Where are we on the way to that target? That's the bullseye. Are we getting there? Right, and again, that seems obvious, but sometimes we miss that. We get drawn into the activity, and we forget that we have an actual goal that we're after. Yes.
So do you post the learning target for every class session?
Generally, yes. So I do ask teachers to post. I certainly do for every lesson. There might be occasional time where you want to do something and you want the students to predict what's going on and you know, get them off balance maybe a little bit, but then I'm going to put the learning target back on. So maybe there's some predictive element to it, but typically speaking, I want the students to know where we're going so that, again, I'm trying to shift the responsibility for learning from me to the students. And if they know what we're doing, then again, it's not the teacher show, it's not a mystery, we know what we're doing today. So that's the reason for posting that. So deliberately connecting our checking for understanding to our learning targets. The point, again, is not the topic or the activity, certainly not teacher action. The point is where we're going, the causes of the French Revolution, right? The purpose of the lesson is not the teacher will talk about the causes of the French Revolution. Students will listen to the teacher talk about the causes of the French Revolution. Okay, it's not the teacher's show. We want them to be able to explain the causes. Okay, so fourth, we want to make sure we're using these to adjust instruction along the way while there's still time. Right, while there's still time to act on it. And so think about it this way: teaching is like coaching. Teaching really is coaching. You wouldn't, as a coach, you wouldn't just hand the playbook out on Monday. Here's the plays we're going to run Friday night, fellas. I'll see you at the game. All right, take these home, study. There's a test on Friday. Right, that would be absurd, right? You wouldn't do that. You'd show up on Friday. Maybe some of the guys had studied the playbook and they know what to do, but it would be a mess. No, we don't do that. Instead, we hand the playbook out, but then you practice, right? Then you practice. And we spend the whole week practicing those plays, whatever they are, whatever the thing is that we're practicing. And then we have the summative assessment on Friday or Saturday, whatever it happens to be. So the practice is formative. The game is summative. You think about it that way. Practice is formative. So it's ongoing. Teaching is coaching. We're getting ongoing feedback from the students. And at the same time, they're getting feedback. We're giving feedback to them. They know, even through the formative assessments, whether they understood or not. and this is adjusting the instruction, if necessary, along the way in preparation for whatever the summative event might be. Okay, so frequent, involuntary, connected learning targets. It's coaching while they're, again, adjusting instruction while it's time to act. And finally, it's ungraded, typically ungraded. I know there's some discussion about is formative graded or not graded. It should be low stakes for sure. That's the key point. We don't want a quick check for understanding to be a stress point. It really is just checking the dashboard. Where are we? Or looking at the GPS. Here we are as individuals and as a class. Again, in the coaching analogy, I coached basketball, and sometimes we would practice situations. If you've played or coached basketball, you might put a score on the scoreboard. All right, there's 30 seconds to go. The game is tied. Let's practice that situation. And then we'd see how we do. That's we're checking for understanding. But at the end of the practice, what happens to that score? Right, we had the blue team and the red team, and we practice the last 30 seconds, then we get a score, and I call that into the paper, right, to be published in the newspaper next week. Hey, the red team beat the blue team in the scrimmage. No, of course not. We unplug the scoreboard, and it's over. So we're keeping score, but it doesn't get published. It's not in the newspaper. It doesn't go on the internet. It's just practice. So typically speaking, the formative assessment needs to be low stakes, almost always ungraded for me. And again, that's just to reduce the anxiety and the tension, the stress. We're just checking. We're just finding out if we understand. That's why we use this scrap paper. We did that when we came in with those admit slips. It could just be anything, old worksheets, whatever you happen to have lying around that's got a blank side. Because almost always this is going to go in the recycling, thank you, which then ends up in the garbage, as we know. But I'm from Oregon, and we recycle everything. So it's low stakes, it's low stress, low anxiety, and we're just checking for understanding, right? Ungraded, almost. So the exception to that would be for my larger group Harkness discussions. I will grade those. There will be a number attached, but the feedback I give to students is descriptive. It's primarily descriptive. It's specific written feedback to the students. There is a number in there because I do need some things for the grade book. I guess we have to do that. But we've created a situation where we downplay the number, we emphasize the feedback, how we're doing in the discussion. And so there's no stress or anxiety over that you know piece of paper with a number. Because I really, especially are you familiar with Harkness discussion when I talk about the large group Socratic kinds of discussions? We don't want that to be an event that people are going to stress over. It really is a student discussion, 40-minute, what we call Harkness discussion or Socratic, is really just a long checking for understanding. We can do it in 3 seconds through a hand signal, or we can take 30 minutes in a discussion, but it's not a graded high-stakes event. It really is just a formative assessment. Okay, so those are sort of the general principles. I won't ask you if there are any questions so far. We'll get a chance to ask questions for sure. Okay, so what I'd like to do is move to the packet. If you have access to that, can see that or have it on your phone. The first two pages are a chart with multiple potential ways to check for understanding that we use at our school. And these range anywhere from a quick check that takes just a few seconds all the way to a Harkness discussion, which can go on for 45, 50 minutes. So there's many, many ways, lots of time in between, depending on the demands that you have in the classroom and what you feel like students need at the time. Again, this is available in a PDF form as well. So I'd like to start with quick checks, really quickly talk about whiteboards. Again, hand signals. How many use whiteboards or have used whiteboards this year? How many times per week? Give me a number. If it's less than one, you can hold up. I've used it, but not every day. Okay, so number of you have used, excellent. So you could talk to any of those people with the hands up on whiteboards. Whiteboards are fantastic. If you don't know what we're talking about, this little individual small whiteboards that make their different sizes, and they have different templates on them as well. I found some I haven't have figured out how to use yet in a thrift store. They were like a shaped like a ping pong paddle. They actually were in the sporting goods section. I thought, wait a minute, those are whiteboards. So I grabbed those and you know, two-sided. Anyway, dry erase pen, you can mark on those, wipe them off. The beauty is you just wipe it away. Right? It's practice. Particularly, I think, in our schools, we have, in the secondary, we have really driven students. Many, I know you're thinking, well, not that kid, but many of your students are highly motivated. They want to do well. They want to have the right answer. They're looking at their futures, and this thing, you're checking for my understanding? I understand. No, we're just going to do it on a whiteboard, and you're going to wipe it off, and it's gone. We don't want them focused so hard on the grade and the performance. We want them concentrating on their thinking and their understanding, not on performance. So that's why we recycle these. We use whiteboards. These things just go away. We don't grade them. This is not in a grade book. I feel like so often we need just to turn the heat down on our students because they're already, so many of them, now maybe some need the heat turned up or whatever. I understand that. But most of them, it's not that way. Most of our kids are, you know, 90% of them are pretty intense, and we need to just get off worrying about performance and think about your thinking. Sorry, there was a hand up. Yes. There you go. Yeah, great. Yeah, there's so many. The hand works great. You just, you know, it's gone. Yeah, it's the boys. So whiteboards, I really encourage you that. I use those for key dates review. I know in elementary they use them for you know, just topic sentences or rewriting. There's so many ways you can use whiteboards. And if you saw some hands up, you might ask some of those people, hey, you use them all the time. What do you do? It's a really, they're just excellent, excellent tool. They're cheap. If you don't have them in your classroom, ask your administrator to get you a set. Just get a class set, some dry erase pens, and just pull those things out often. Yes? Yes, and that works just as well. Yes, excellent. Good. Okay, if you have next to you or nearby one of these cards, a slip of paper has F on one side, S on the other. If you sat towards the front, you all have one? Oh, you gave it away. Okay. If you don't, I'm sorry. If you sat in the back, that's because you sat in the back. You don't get one. But I'll hand those out. So this is a response card. Now, in your chart, you'll see response card under writing prompts, and that's a mistake. That's an error. Response card really should be up under quick check. So draw a little arrow if you don't mind, then you fix my problem there. Response card. So I'm going to read you a series of statements, and if you think this describes formative assessment, then you hold up the F, right? I've got my A, B cards up here. If you think it's summative, you hold up the... Excellent, you are clever. You're right on top of it. All right, so F or S, formative or summative. Here we go. Are we ready? Those with cards? Okay, this type of assessment is usually ungraded. This type of assessment is usually ungraded. Okay. Excellent. All right. So tell me, ma'am, if you wouldn't mind, why did you hold up the F correctly, I might say? Excellent. We just talked about, and what did we just talk about? You also have an F.
Right. It's a low-stress evaluation.
Low stress. Anything you want to add to that? You want to add anything? Okay. And I think I said something along the lines of we don't usually grade them, right? All right, so it's ungraded. Excellent. You were paying attention. Excellent. All right, number two. These assessments are used to adjust teaching during instruction. Take a look around. What do you see looking around? Go ahead and take a look around, Liz. They're all the same. You have the same answer. Did everybody miss it, or do you? Right. Why? Why is that?
Well, because if I see somebody doesn't know it, I need to help
Okay, excellent. All right, let's move on. Number three. These assessments provide items for the grade book. These assessments provide items for the grade book. I'm seeing lots of S's. Does anybody have a wrong answer, please? Somebody. There's a blank. Excellent, a blank one. There, okay. You have a defective card, ma'am. I'm sorry. All right, so that is summative, yes. It's an item for the grade book. A quiz at the end of a unit. Quiz at the end of a unit. Okay, are you sure? Oh, you changed his answer. Did you change your answer because you looked around or because? Uh-huh. And the end of the unit told you? Summative assessment, yes. Okay. I haven't fooled anybody yet. That's probably good. That's not my job. Next one. Maybe this one's a little trickier. A thesis paper due at the end of a semester. Thesis paper due at the end of a semester. General agreement, are we sure? I'll give you a few seconds to change your answer if you want. You want to change your answer? Why not? Would you agree with that? What she just said? Could you hear what she said? You do agree. Why do you agree? All right. Gosh, you guys are sharp. You got a hand up. So you wanted to say something. Yes. Okay, so let's talk about that thesis paper. So we have a thesis paper at the end of the unit. How do you turn that into some formative assessments? There's a great question. How might I make a thesis? So the paper itself is summative, I guess, but is there a formative process along the way? Checkpoints along the way, like?
Resources,
outline, rough drafts. Okay, excellent. Pardon? Writing a thesis. Let's just get a thesis statement on. What's your divisio? Can you just make a clear statement of the divisio? Okay, so good. So those are all form. Now, you could give those a grade as well. But the main thing is you're breaking it down and checking along the way. We don't just hand out here's a thesis paper assignment that's due on the last day of school. Good luck. I know some college professors do that, but never mind. Not notorious for great teaching, right? They're scholars in there, but that's not really a sound teaching method. I would not advise us in our schools to be doing that. So you could break that down along the way. Okay, well, next one, hand signals to check readiness. Hand signals used to check for readiness. Is that an S or an F? Okay, again, this is far too easy. I had to make these harder than that. Excellent. And finally, the use of response cards. You all got that. Excellent. Okay, so here's an example of something. It could be a very quick check. I don't know how long that took, but it didn't take very long. Response cards are great for just true, false. I've used them for quotations. I'll read a series of quotations. Is this Montesquieu or Rousseau? And you've got the M and the R card, right? And those kinds of things. Frequently, quick check. I can scan the whole room and see what the responses are. Sometimes I've had them close their eyes or put their heads down or something to prevent, depending on the room arrangement, so they're not able just to look around. But it's an excellent true-false kind of quick check. What's the potential problem with this as feedback for me? What problem do you see or problems? Oh, yeah. That's what I really meant. Oh, that's what I meant. Yeah, what else? So they could look around. Yeah. Yes. And you can do that with a whiteboard as well. 1, 2, 3, go. When I do that with the key dates. What other?
I was just going to tell you, you asked about you didn't know how to do the
quotes.
Do you hear the ping pong paddle?
Yes.
You just have them write things on either side
of
the
thing, show it. Great. I like it. There's got to be some use for this, the handle. That's the thing. Yeah, what other problems I have? Uh, Yeah. Okay. So if, and this is what I want to find out, right? If are there students that are consistently getting this wrong, then what? We didn't really have any of those, so that was unfortunate, or fortunate. But what could I do for that? So, oh, they just held up the F instead of the S. So what would I do in that situation? I could tell her, oh, no, it's not. It's really this. Or better yet, I would do what? I would ask another student, why did you put F? What's that? What do you think? I would bring in another student to scaffold that, right? So that shows me where students are. And if I'm getting consistently, which I think you're indicating in your question or statement, that then I might need to hold them afterwards. Okay, let's talk a little bit through this. Why aren't you understanding? The other problem with this, of course, is that they can look around, but ultimately, if you've got a two-sided card, you have a, it's 50-50 shot. I'm just a lucky guesser. I got it. All right, so what do I have to do? Even with a quick check like that, I need to ask. And I did some of that, right? I have to ask, okay, you got it right. Excellent. Why? Can you explain to me? Now, it's so it kind of violates the all-inclusive, because everybody was playing, but I couldn't ask every one of you why. So they have to understand there's some limitation. But if you only have, if it's very quick or just a quick review or quick check, response cards are excellent. Okay. So as we exit this part of the presentation, let's see how to do this. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give you a slip. Well, just write it on your card. Let's do that. If you have a response card, and I'll just grab those to do. As we exit this, would you please just write down one question that you have so far? If you have a question, please write it. And you can write it anywhere on and then pass those to the aisle. So we're exiting one part of the presentation, moving to another. If you have a question, I'll give you just a few seconds. Write down a question you might have. Pass it to the middle. And we're going to move on to writing prompts here in just a second. Sorry for those of you on the audio. No, it's still running. The tape is still running. Okay, so questions to the middle, please, if you have those. Who has a question? You just show me your questions. Could you? Okay, pass those to the middle, and then pass those front. Could we do that really quickly? Great. And just would you mind just grabbing them all from that side? Any from this side? Great, thank you. And we'll hopefully get a chance again to get into these here in a second. Thanks very much. Okay, so you just did an exit pass. Well done. That is what we're going to move into next. So again, on your packet, the second section here is under writing prompts. I want to talk just a little bit about the exit pass as a way to check for understanding. And there are many, many ways, again, to do this. If you look at that chart, I've listed a number of them. Typically, I will use an exit pass as we move out of one class, right, at the end of a class period, some kind of question or summary, restatement, again, tied to the learning target. I will collect those and look them over and see, it's a quick check. Everybody's done it. I can quickly check what our level of understanding is. Now, I can do a number of different things with this, right? I can take those. I can put it in recycling. It's done. Everybody's fine. Recycle. I can save out a couple for the next lesson. I have a teacher in our school who's fantastic at this. He will photocopy them and redistribute to groups the next day, and they'll write about them and they'll revise. And you know, he'll make an exit ticket last for a long time, days and days if you really want to. So it can be a very quick check. It can turn into something much longer. A nice review activity could become the basis of a writing activity for later. But again, the main thing is I'm checking everybody during instruction, so I have a chance to adjust if needed. It's ungraded. It's probably going to be recycled. It's it's all play. Everybody's in. So take a quick look. If you have access to packet, to pages 3 and 4, where there's an idea for extending an exit ticket. So this is something I did at the end of a period. We were studying the Industrial Revolution, so what were some of the factors favoring Great Britain at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution? I did a very quick check at the end of the period where they listed as many of those factors as they could without looking at their notes. And that, so I kept those. Then the next day, we did a quick review activity. And so I took those cards and I included some distractors, some false information. So I took their cards, and I think as you can see on page 4, if you've got that, their list on the left, and I included some bad answers. So, and this seems a little silly for 11th graders, I know, but they enjoyed it. Had them put their heads down, so they can't see each other. And then so I would read a series of, here's something that was a factor. Was this a factor favoring Great Britain? Thumbs up or thumbs down? Or again, thumbs sideways. Right, so I could see right away. They could maybe guessing, so I'm going to have to ask, right? But I can see, false answers for sure, and I can check, and if they're uncertain, we can stop and talk about that. So that takes, 5 minutes in the one period, 5 minutes at the beginning of another, but it bridges the day. It doesn't leave that learning behind. It bridges it to the next day, and at the end, again, just throw it away. Low stakes, there's no grade, quick review. I've gotten feedback. They get feedback through the activity we're doing, and I get to check for their understanding, and we keep going from there. So that's one way you can take something that lasts just a minute or two and stretch it longer if you have time. And again, if you want to photocopy and turn it into a bigger activity, it can last much longer if you have the time to do that. So, speaking of exit tickets, let's take a look at a couple of those and see if we answer some questions here. Oh, how would you use these, or would these techniques work with first graders? There's a great question. Would these techniques work with first? I thought this was a secondary workshop. Who's the elementary? I'm just kidding. It's fine. Would they work? Yes, of course. Now you have to adapt. All of these are adaptable. This isn't just for secondary classes. You would need to adapt to your level of student. Can they use a whiteboard? Yeah, sure. Can you use hand signals? I mean, you're not going to do a Harkness discussion with first graders. But yes, absolutely, these are across the board. These are not just secondary items. How do you seamlessly pass out whiteboards or slips of paper without disrupting the flow of class? Yeah, that's a great question. I have 11th graders, so I just say go get the whiteboards. That works. If I had 7th graders, I'm going to have a routine that I've practiced for how to go get the whiteboards. Or maybe two students are in charge of the whiteboards, distributing boards and pens. I'm not going to just get up and go get boards. So that's a good idea to have a routine, particularly depending on the size of your class or the maturity of your class. You'll want to have a whiteboard or a distributing routine. That's a great question. Maybe somebody has a great idea about that, how you distribute whiteboards. They're already at their desk, right, with third grade, right. Keep them in the desk, probably the best way. Yes, what else? Excellent, they know what to do. Yeah, it's really good to practice routine. One more. Yes, excellent. And I will do that with the admit slips as well, just have the papers there as they come in, or you could write the question on the board. I'm a traveling teacher, so I don't always get in and able to set the room up the way I like it. Would prefer to do that. The last 17 years as a traveling teacher, that's pretty good, isn't it? I should fix that. I'm the head of school. Why can't I fix that? So it could just be a question on the board. As you come in, be sure you write on this, take a slip and write on that question. So I think having a routine, again, depending on maturity of your students and the numbers of students, that saves a lot of time to do that. Okay, hopefully we can come back to some of those later. I realize we're pressing on time here. So exit passes, a number of different ways to check. Again, typically at the end of a period, could be very quick, and you get a good chance just to look over and see where students are and see if you need to do something different for the next day, or are we okay? That's, for me, that's kind of essentially it. Think, pair, shares, A, tell, B, read, write, pair, shares, 30-second pair, shares. These are other ways to very, very quickly check for understanding. There's often a writing portion to that. Are you all? How many of you used pair shares? You know what I'm talking about there? Okay, so you just we're in the middle of discussion, and maybe we should do one. I think I have one here somewhere. But you just turn to partner. Okay, turn to somebody next to you, and again explain to them what formative assessment is. Explain formative assessment. The other student explain what summative assessment is. 30 seconds, and so they're having again to talk. And in a class of 20, you have 10 pairs. Can you listen to 10 pairs of students? Not 100%, but can you hear wrong answers? Probably. Yeah, if something is just, I'm not sure, you're probably going to hear that, and then you get a chance to check that. So it's not perfect in the sense that you're not listening to everybody all at once, but you can listen in on several quick conversations quickly. Does that make sense? You can listen in on those conversations, and then, of course, you can check. You can randomly pick out partners. So think, pair, share, or a little bit of writing, and then share what you wrote in a small group, but then, of course, with the class as a whole, and cold calling to make sure that you're checking on those students as well. So maybe just I'll say just a little something about many of you use sticks with the names, student names on the sticks. Or cold call, and I think those are great. I advocate for targeted cold calling rather than just random cold call, because you know your students, and just giving you permission to do that. The popsicle sticks are fine, and cold calling is fine. So I'm not saying you can't do that, but I think you know what your students are doing and which ones need to talk, which ones don't talk, and so I would advocate for a sort of targeted cold calling as part of this as well. So if you've got partners, quickly pair sharing, you know who those two or that one is that you need to call on. So I would encourage you to do that. Question in the back. Yes. Yes. Excellent. That is excellent. Yeah. Make them explain what the other student said, not just their own view. Good. So that's, again, another way. These are getting a little bit longer. Hand signals are real quick. Exit pass is just a minute or two. The pair shares are going to take a couple more minutes. But it's engaging. It's all-inclusive to some degree. And you're checking to make sure that it's getting us toward the learning target. That's what that's all about. Another thing we'll do is a 3-2-1 card. And I'm going to give a few of you up front here an opportunity to do that. In fact, I've got plenty of these. So on a 3-2-1 card, how many people have used some version of that? An index card, we call it 3-2-1? Oh, good, something you haven't done yet. Excellent. So on this index card, would you please, you're going to give me, we're going to take, again, 30 seconds or so, three key ideas we've done so far. Without looking at your notes, by the way, three key ideas that you've got, two questions or observations, concerns maybe. I've got some more index cards here. Three key ideas, two questions, and I've got one last card. One. Yeah, exactly. Any combination will do. 1-1-0, 1-1-2-1-2. Whatever, there's nothing magical about 3-2-1. Three key ideas, two observations, one connection with a previous speaker that we've done so far. 3-2-1. And if you only get 1-1-1, I'm fine with that. 1-0-1. So this is a good way to check during instruction. Again, it can be an exit pass. Obviously, this is a kind of exit pass, or a during instruction kind of check. What were some of those three key ideas? What two questions do you have, and an observation? At the end of a period, I can collect these, and I can find out what the questions are that they think they have. Really looking for connections to other ideas that we've studied in the past or from other classes, and then, of course, what are the key ideas that stuck out? So that's really good at the end of a period, excellent in the middle of a period as well. So do a 3-2-1, partner up, discuss that with your partner, and then we will pull those together as a class and maybe put them on the whiteboard. Okay, give me some of the key ideas, give me some of the questions, and or maybe we'll add sticky notes in here, which is the next thing we'll talk about. How many of you used your post-its or sticky notes for checking? Excellent, okay. So, so keep working on those 3-2-1s if you are working on those. And let's go to the next section here, and that is the use of sticky notes. I think there are a variety of different forms of that, of course, small to large. I just read about one that sticky notes that actually aren't sticky notes, but they're dry erase sticky. They're not adhesive. They stick somehow. I don't know how it works, but they're dry erase, and I'm definitely going to get those because I can just wipe them off and reuse those. So using sticky notes to check for understanding and engage students is a technique I would commend to you. If you look at, I have listed some on the chart here, pages 1 and 2. We do lists of say, key ideas or key dates, causes and effect, cause of one color, effect in another color. And again, the idea is we're taking these and putting them up on the whiteboard. And the beauty of the sticky notes, of course, is that they can be rearranged, moved around, you can draw arrows, you can circle, you can do many, many different things with these. It's formative assessment, it's not a graded assignment, but we're getting everybody involved using this. So we'll take a look at a couple of specifics here in this. So if you would, if you have the package, page 8 is an example of how I use a sticky note. This one is for our reading of Tale of Two Cities. So in my main letters, we read Tale of Two Cities, and early in the novel, we're looking at these themes of being buried and recalled to life. The resurrection and burial are two major themes early on. So I have given the students the main characters so far in sticky notes, and I've got them into groups and asked them it's a very simple review activity. Who do these, under what theme do these characters best fit? And they talk about them in their small groups, and they go put them up on the board. So that's what, and I apologize for the quality of the photo, but that's what you have. So under buried, you have Sidney Carton. Jerry is associated with buried, as we know, etc. Recalled to life, Dr. Manette. Darnay has been recalled to life at this point after the first trial, right? And so we put those on the board, and then they, of course, have to defend their answer. Why did you put that character there? Could this character be over here? And you can see there's some that are questionable at this point. We're not sure which theme they're associated with. We can move them around. We can draw arrows, do many different things. Page 9, there's another example. This is from textbook reading. So the page 8 was small stickies. Page 9 has a little bit larger, and I know these are a little more expensive, but they're not hugely expensive, and they're just a tremendous tool. So I had 4 groups from the section of reading in our textbook, and group A was supposed to come up with 3 connections, group B, 3 excellent questions, group D, 3 most interesting, group B, I think, is most important. So in their small groups, again, they're working in the small groups, I'm circulating and listening in, so I'm checking groups for understanding. Then after they created their stickies, they put those on the board, as you can see, and then, of course, I asked individuals in those groups, based on what I overheard from the conversations, to defend why they have those answers. What is that answer, really? Why is that there? What does that mean? Then the whole group gets involved, because they've all done the reading. What else would you add? Would you move these any other place? What's left out? Is there anything incorrect? Anything needs to be revised, etc.? So it's a excellent means to check for understanding for individuals. Full engagement is, of course, another advantage. And then we look at the whole group and get a chance to cold call, and students have to defend their answers. All right, so sticky notes. See if I have one other. Oh, yes, last one. Page 10 and 11. So this was a little more complicated, but we read Pride and Prejudice in my Humane Letters class. And so after the first proposal, the disastrous first proposal, and I apologize if anybody hasn't read, did I give the plot away? Mr. Darcy proposes, and it goes very, very badly. as you know. And then there's the letter that follows. So what we're doing is trying to connect the character of Elizabeth and Darcy to their actions. What did they feel and say? What did they do? What does this say about their character? So this is that chart here. So I asked them to do this individually, and then they got into small groups, and I think we had four groups. I don't remember how many groups we had. I think it was four. Then they would, with sticky notes, different colored sticky notes, put the, as you can see on page 11, the actions and what that says about their character. What actions did they take? What does that say about their character? And then I drew this very crude chart on the board. I mean crude as in rudimentary, I'm sorry. For those who can't see the chart, that it was, you know, a simple chart on the board. And the sticky notes go on the board. And then we have a great opportunity to talk about the character of Darcy, the character of Elizabeth. What did they do? Why did they do that? Again, do we need to add anything? Do we need to move any of these around? Are they in the right place? What's missing? All those kinds of discussions happen. And at the end, we take all the sticky notes off the board and erase it, and it's done. So it's low stakes. Everybody's involved. I'm checking, again, the group discussion and the larger class discussion. Now, again, you can see how this takes longer. They've got this individual piece, and you could have them turn that in if you wanted to look at it. And then there's a longer group piece. So we've moved from 2-second, 3-second hand signals to 20, 25-minute, 30-minute assignment. But it's all the same thing. It's all checking for understanding. It's all formative assessment. There's no grade, and the students are doing the work, and I'm seeing where we are. All right, I think I need to move on to graphic organizers since we're getting close to time here. So on page 12, if you have page 12, you'll see a bubble chart. Looks like that. If you have that, would you please fill in at least three attributes of formative assessment? So in the middle, you will write formative assessment, in the middle of your graphic organizer, formative assessment, and then fill in at least three of the bubbles that are on the outside without looking at your notes. Three traits of formative assessment, one in each bubble. And for those who don't have bubbles, you can draw something that looks like that. You see that? There's a center bubble. So graphic, it's an example, a simple example of a graphic organizer. How many of you use graphic organizers occasionally in your classes? Excellent. So it's a great, these of course are excellent processing tools, but it's also an excellent way to check for understanding using the bubble. So again, filling in three attributes without looking. We're going to take about 30 seconds since we're running short on time. Someone near you, there's somebody else with a graphic organizer, fill in the missing two. So pair up 30 seconds. We'll take 30 seconds. Pair up 30 seconds. Fill in what needs to be filled in. Go. If you're sitting next to somebody with a graphic organizer, work it together. What else would you add to that? For the sake of time, if you need to look at your notes, you can do that now. Go ahead and check your notes. Fill in. All right. Let me give you a quick example. On page 15 is an example we used in our teacher development, staff development, on classical instruction methods. And I divided this into three groups, grammar, logic, and rhetoric teachers. And they all had this graphic organizer, this web, and their job was to fill that in. And so we have three groups discussion, fill it in with what are good, you know, what are grammar methods, what are rhetoric methods. And then we put those up on the whiteboard, or drew on the whiteboard, added these things up, and had a full group discussion about what those things were. It's everybody's involved, I'm listening to the discussion, the whole class is here, we're defending our answers, and then when it's all over, we wipe it off. Okay, last thing here on graphic organizers is there's also a double bubble. If you look back on page 14, it's not a great picture. So there's a double bubble, I think, is on page, was it 13? So there's a picture of one on page 14. This is my students read The Prince or Utopia over the summer. And then we would do one of these, which they do. It's a similarities and differences, basically, is what it is. So The Prince in one bubble, Utopia in the other, and then we're mixing groups. So they've read the book separately. We mix The Prince and Utopia groups, and they fill in similarities going in the middle, differences on the outside. So they have mixed groups. They do a similarity difference, a double bubble. They might even partner up. I think I've done double bubble buddies. I think that's what we did. Double bubble buddy. Try to say that. So they do that. Then we could, again, do it on the board as a full group, and that's what we see on this next page. It's a quick check for understanding. Doesn't take that long to do, but it can turn into a longer class discussion too. Or in this sense, in this case, I think we did this sort of lead into the larger class discussion. They partnered up. They did this. Then we had our full class Harkness discussion on The Prince and Utopia. So it's a great sort of introduction. Well, except it's not overlapping. They're not overlapping bubbles, but it's another way to web that and diagram it. Some students love this. Others would rather just do an outline. But if sometimes students, if they just outline, they don't see the relationships. That's the wonderful thing about the graphic organizer is they see the relationship between the information, between the cause and effect or similarities and differences more visually. It's still full of words. I'm not drawing pictures. But it's just another way to organize it for some students. Quick question.
The way that it dovetails with invention with regards to writing is another aspect. It's finding out exactly what skills some of the formative assessments can actually build in other areas.
Writing. Very good. Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Okay. So, getting close here. I think for the sake of time, we're going to jump over Harkness discussions, but I'll talk a little bit about that. A Harkness discussion for us is a largely student-driven, it's teacher-led in a sense that I set the agenda, what the reading is and what we're looking for, but the students do most of the discussing. They are required to write questions, involve each other in discussion, think about connections to previous learning, all of those kinds of things over the course of a 30-minute, 40-minute discussion. As a teacher, I will intervene as needed or keep the discussion going, or if I need to correct something that just doesn't get corrected by other students. But again, this discussion, this 40-minute discussion is just a check for understanding. It's a low-stakes event that everybody's engaged in, everybody's involved, everyone must participate in some way. So it's just another means of a formative assessment. Okay. Just want to highlight a couple things here, and I'll just have time for some question and answer. If there's more information on this at classicalteaching.com. I think that's on your outline is the website there. There's all kinds of free stuff if you're interested as a teacher and or administrator as well, classicalteaching.com. My email's there. If you have questions about formative assessment or anything else, feel free to shoot me an email. And so let's take just a couple of minutes here and see if there are any questions, and hopefully we can get to the myth slips. A few minutes. Questions? Is there a question? Okay, well, I got 2 minutes? Okay, we got 2 minutes for questions. It's just a review. Yeah, tell your missing classmate what was the big thing from yesterday. Yeah, thank you. Another question? If you do, yes. Who can't write? Wow, that's a great question. That would be a larger question. Let's talk about that. Yeah, excellent. Okay, again, if you have any questions, feel free to email me, stop me in the hall if you want to talk more. Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it. Yeah.